It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
I already know where this is going to go early, so we're just going to get this out.
This is segment one.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano.
Am I really that predictable?
It's our formula now. It's like our, okay. It's like our bit. But I'm just letting you know, like, I called it. Like, you called it on me. Mm-hmm. You said, don't say it. And I said it last week on our pastel appreciation show about the snow, and it snowed this week. I literally had to bust back out the scarf. But I wasn't all that upset about the ensemble. Got to be honest. Okay? I'm just saying it was one last layered gasp while I was watching the Cubs play and it was snowing.
Plaid. Anyway. Right. But I think we're close to being over that.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really excited. I've got a couple things I want to mention because we didn't really get to it on last week's show. But if you didn't have the opportunity to talk about springs and pastels for the Easter show, I want you to go back to the archive on Lake96.1.com, and I want you to go to the archive, and I want you to go to the Easter show on pastels, because it's not about pastels and Easter. What that show was about an appreciation for pastels. And I think, Nance, I think I made my case. I think I made my case as pastels, as a foundational element, and as an element that can punctuate a space, and it's easy to mix and match pastels, and I'm letting you know it will not leave your home looking like an Easter egg, okay?
You may have slightly...
I moved the needle?
Move the needle for me and Melinda, but I don't think either one of us are completely convinced that pastel is
so. Let me tell you where my bar is on this. Okay, ready?
Yeah,
my bar is you look at a pastel moving forward, and you at least say maybe.
Okay,
that's success to me. Okay. If I have pried with my hands, okay, if I have pried open the possibility with my 55-year-old kung fu grip, okay, if I have opened a crack, okay, in you having a possibility that a pastel may find its way into your interior as a way to sort of introduce color into your life, then I have done my job.
I said my bedroom's light blue, so.
I have done my job. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Speaking of doing my job, let's get on with the meat of today's show. I have a topic that I'm excited to explore with you in particular.
Oh.
I do consider you a leader. Being a leader in your industry, also as a woman in your industry.
Okay.
I think that there's a lot of, I think you're the perfect person in the conversation about what tactical and realistic leadership looks like while at the same time being a visionary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I are visionaries in very maybe different ways, obviously different industries, but a lot of times what I find is that the same way that you approach interior design business or the management or ownership of a radio show and a radio station are one and the same, that the attributes, that there are similarities.
Creativeness is the common denominator.
But mm-hmm. and to listen, and by very definition, to see the things others do not
mm-hmm.
Requires in the very definition of a visionary imagination. And that's a very difficult thing to reverse engineer for people who you are trying to ask to participate in the vision.
It's hard to teach that, yeah.
It's hard to teach that. And it's hard to also teach the ability to articulate it. You know, there's this whole thought process behind like lead by example. The problem is these days, what if people aren't paying attention? Like, that's what I'm finding. I'm finding it's like, well, the good old, you just lead by example. Yeah, but what if everyone's so situationally distracted and unaware that that's not a possibility?
Mm-mm.
What if these days they're literally not paying attention?
Right.
And require visionaries as in an effort to constantly be aligning behavior that's in line with the vision to what the phrase I want to use is maybe disturb the complacency and the routine of all of your partners. And those partners can be employees. Those partners can be advertisers. Those partners can be clients.
Right.
And sometimes those partners can be family. So sometimes what I refer to as shaking the tree, to get people's attention means that the loose fruit just sometimes sort of falls to the ground because it was kind of ready for, well, removal from the tree, right? Mm-hmm. So that sometimes new things can grow on the limbs, okay?
Pruning.
Pruning is a very, you know, and that's not talked about, right? Like what if the reason that vision or a visionary concept doesn't take root is because it's overcrowded with behavioral weeds that won't allow it to be nurtured to reach the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
What if that's really the crux maybe of today's conversation is, it's not about whether you are or are not a visionary. There are some people who just, because I don't believe that people don't have some level of imagination.
Right.
I think we do, and you have heard me say this, that I believe that our imagination, unfortunately, as we age, can sometimes go dormant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it goes dormant for a variety of reasons. You don't have time. It's underappreciated. You've tried to be imaginative and you've gotten shut down, right? Which is the underappreciated piece.
Right.
You know, maybe financially, you dumped a bunch of money into an idea or a concept and it didn't work. And then it's very hard, right? It can be very difficult. I mean, the marketplace is and can be very brutal to mediocre ideas that you think are special. And sometimes the benefit of experience and age and wisdom, it's interesting that in the definition of visionary, I thought this was a fascinating one. In the definition, it said thinking about or planning the future with imagination, and it also says, or wisdom.
Right.
I think it's imagination and wisdom.
Yeah.
I think that the definition is flawed because I think that's a false choice. It's not one or the other.
You have to have both.
And whether you're applying this imagination to your interiors, which we'll talk a little bit about on today's show and kind of how we do that at the Design Coach and kind of what we're experiencing firsthand to bring our big vision to life, which is our new project that we're, our new sort of showroom experience. I've got a lot of announcements along those lines. But also, what does it take to bring mini visions to life? You know, like everybody talks about vision, like it needs to be this big thing, right, Nancy?
Like the big umbrella.
Yeah,
right.
Like what if your vision in your radio station is just this year, you know, we're going to have, we're going to raise the revenue bar on advertising, or we're going to have, or even something cultural, like we're going to have a more, better communication amongst staff, right? And what does the vision for that look like? I think all of those things are visionary, but again, we tend to take this really big, broad brush and think that it needs to be this really big idea.
Well, what business just does one thing? None.
Well, or just does big things without doing the small things.
Right. I mean, you know, we have, so in this business, there would be a visionary goal of, you know, on the digital aspect,
sure,
on the on-air aspect, on the sales aspect, perhaps on additional equipment or upgrading equipment. And so there's a lot of little, like no business should be thinking of it as one big umbrella, because you have to focus on the things that all lead down the path to the big vision.
Well, and I also think that there's this misnomer that the visionary doesn't understand the details that are involved in getting there. That's where the wisdom piece comes in, because a lot of people will say, well, you're a visionary, you're not good at the details. No, hold, stop, pause, please, no.
I've done all the details.
I've done all of the details in my 25-plus years experience.
Right.
I choose to give people an opportunity to now do them for our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And make no mistake about it, it is a choice.
Mm-hmm.
It is a choice.
Right.
Nancy, you have chosen to own this radio station
mm-hmm.
and also work here.
I know.
Right. You're not, you know what I'm saying?
Thinking?
Like, it's not like you're not in every detail. So
yeah.
I use you as an example because you and I are very much alike in this regard, where we have a vision for where we want our companies to go, what we want our service offerings to look like, and what we want those outcomes to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also in the day to day trying to articulate, teach, coach, and reverse engineer the vision in both large and small ways.
Yep.
So I love the fact that in the definition they brought up wisdom, because I think people talk about visionaries and they think they're these flighty big picture thinkers,
like muses.
Well, yeah, they're,
you
like
know,
we're like
floating
these big
around
picture
and,
people who
right.
are like aren't good at the details and can't figure it out. And it's like
But here's like, a great idea.
And I'm not saying that those types of visionaries aren't out there, but that's a stereotype that is absolutely, it's a myth.
It's just like when people say,
and it's and honestly, it's professionally irritating.
It is. It's just like when people say, oh, man, I would love to own my own business and I have control of my time and my, and I'm like.
That's what you and I both have, like.
No, that's not how it works.
No, that's not how it works, right? Mm-hmm. The balance point in where I want to sort of launch this discussion is actually in this, not the definition of it, because I feel like we've done that in segment number one here sufficiently, but it's in the journey of how to be able to articulate the wisdom piece of vision, the wisdom piece of vision, okay? And impart that wisdom to people who lack the experience.
Sorry.
Of that journey.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, and
like they, like I, you've 25. So what you try to do as a visionary is you're trying to catch up sometimes some more inexperienced professionals, at whatever level, or I'm going to say inexperienced. I'm going to say less experienced.
Right.
And you're trying to use, you're always trying to constantly do the balance between, can you see it? And here's how it actually happens. Okay. And here's the thing about vision that people, vision is easy. You can make very broad statements about what you want to try to achieve as a company, even as a person. I want to have a six pack and have 2% body fat.
Woohoo!
At age 55.
Me too.
Right? You can do that. But then there's the work to get there.
Right.
Okay? You can say, I want to have a $10 million company. Then there's the processes, the people, the systems, right? And the process to achieve that. That's where the work is. So as we talk about like this big visionary concept, that's, to me, it's irritating because the wisdom piece never gets talked about. Mm-hmm. And this is where the conversation on today's show is, vision is awesome because it keeps you dreaming and it keeps you like dreaming big, even in
motivated.
At an advanced professional stage. Mm-hmm. It keeps you motivated, like you can still see it. And as long as you're a professional that can still see it, I don't think visionaries get enough credit for the wisdom that comes from repeatedly trying, failing, and succeeding, learning from those things to implement both big and small visions in life and in business. And that's our subject for today's show. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And I have to say, you know, I'm asked from time to time, Nancy, about, you know, they're like, wow, well, people who listen to the show, whether it's vendors or clients or just, you know, your average listener who, you know, we're so appreciative that, I mean, I've been doing the show now for a while.
Yeah. I don't even know how long.
I don't even know, but it's just so gracious of you guys to continue to have this middle child blather on about interior design and whatever the hell else is on his mind. On Sunday mornings. But I will say this, that it's always interesting that they always say, well, you talk about a lot of things. I mean, listen, if you did a bunch of snippets, you're like, listen, you catch a couple cocktail shows, you think that we are a, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a boozy crew, okay? Cocktails are in there, but only as part of the equation, right?
I love cocktails.
I know. Listen, I do too. And there's a lot of analogies between life and a cocktail. It's all about percentages.
Right.
Okay? We can... Listen, you want me to go off on the tangent about percentages of color as it relates to the color combinations in your cocktail and in your room? I can do that. Not going there today. Not going there today. What I am going to do today is to talk about this piece that we're talking about in the first segment, which is visionary, that it's not flighty, implementing a vision in its most important realm is that vision, in order to bring it to life, needs to be reverse engineered through a combination of effort, experience, wisdom, and knowledge. And what I find is a lot of times before we went to break, I asked you about like, well, how do you take your vision and simultaneously help people continue to see it? Because remember, if they lose sight of the vision, then they don't understand why you're asking them to behave a certain way or do a certain activity. Like if they lose sight of the vision, you have a problem.
It's literally trying to make them understand what cog in the wheel they are.
Yes.
Because that's exactly what it is.
Yes. Yes. Right. I think that's a very good way to put it.
And also
how the teeth of those gears mesh with other gears.
Right.
Because if you know anything about the way, well, gears work, there's not just two gears.
Mm-hmm.
There's two big gears, three big gears, a bunch of little gears holding on to the other gear. Then there's another, like,
right.
It's, you know what I mean? It's a little bit like a watch.
Right. And ultimately, okay. You get the time.
And ultimately, you get the time. Right. Hopefully, it's accurate.
Right.
And on time.
Right.
Okay. That's a great analogy. Mm-hmm. But I will say is, you struggle like I do, and I know this because I try to, I mean, I've tried my whole career to really sort of really break this down, and I feel like I'm doing it. I think I'm doing it right now at a very elite level. I really do.
And you're breaking down?
No, I feel like I'm doing what I'm doing at an elite level.
It's like you don't.
No, and at an elite
level. Like you're having a breakdown.
No, because my understanding of my situational awareness on this is like, I think my wisdom quotient's like really high. And how do you get that, right? You get wisdom through success and through failure. You've heard me say that.
Mostly failure.
Mostly failure, yeah. And then reinventing,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, you know, when Edison said that he only had to find one way to do the light bulb, but he had 1,000 ones that didn't work. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean that those 1,000 were failures.
Right.
Right? It just meant that I found that those, that didn't work that way.
That's called knowledge.
That's called wisdom based on experience, right?
Right.
And so this is one of the things that I wanted to talk about in segment number two is, if you're constantly trying to reinforce the vision, right? Now, in some instances, that could be a vision for a family. That could be a vision for a marriage. That could be a vision for a relationship. A vision is a very important thing because it keeps people motivated towards something so that you feel like in life you're advancing. That's like right now. It's like I sort of see some of the stuff that I'm seeing and I'm like, yeah, I'm 55 years old and I am not one of these guys that's got one eye on retirement.
Right.
I'm not looking to land my plane anytime soon. Mm-mm. Julie knows this. My team knows this. My clients know this. I'm not. Mm-hmm. Okay?
You're stuck with me.
Well, I'm just going to keep creating. Right?
And that's I are going to be doing this radio show. You'll be like 90 years old.
It'll be like 2056. You know?
We're both what are we drinking
we're
today?
We're both hooked up to IVs.
Right?
IV right. backpacks, right? At that juncture.
Oxygen.
Yeah, with like Oculus glasses because right. We can't see anymore. Our eyes are shot. Right?
Hey, Sonny.
It's like, I didn't know you were a 32-year-old blonde, Nancy.
Can you?
You look great. Anyway.
Sonny, can you push the buttons?
Yeah.
Turn the mics on.
At some point, like in the future, we'll like be whatever we think our best versions are of ourselves.
Right.
Because that's what we're already trying to practice on social media anyway.
Right. We'll have wheelchair wars.
Yeah, a flawless experience. at least outwardly, which is a whole nother topic. Anyway, we digress and back to our topic at hand, which is when we're always trying to articulate and reinforce the vision. It can be a challenge as a visionary to really consistently put in the effort to work with a team responsible and tasked with and challenged with putting the vision together or helping you execute the vision. With when their experience levels are just different and at different stages.
Right. Well, and then they have different responsibilities as well. Mm-hmm. And again, it's you know, you have to understand that this is your part of the vision. This is your part of the vision. And you have to trust me that if you do your part right and you do your part right, they come together as a huge part of where we're trying to get to.
Yeah, we are experiencing at the Design Coach right now, because our team has, you know, has grown in size and we're experiencing the success and the good fortune that we have. Because we did outline a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And we do feel like we're aligned as a team in delivering it. We also understand what behaviors on the part of partners who want to associate themselves with us, what that looks like, what it doesn't look like.
Mm-hmm.
That's becoming very apparent. People and companies and partners that used to be okay for one level of our vision,
mm-hmm.
now that the vision is different and bigger, just don't have the bandwidth
right.
to be able to help support our vision.
Right.
That's an interesting concept, but sometimes that's an internal thing, right? How have you over the years, when you've had to articulate a vision, whether it's been in management or owner of the station, or even in sometimes to yourself, is there a process that you go through? Is it an organized process? Is it a structured process? Like, how do you go about explaining, here's where you fit into the vision and here's what I need from you? Like, how do you, is there anything that you can share with me about how you do that? Because I'm experiencing some things that are working, right? Really, really well. And I'm also realizing, okay, I think I just talked over them.
Right.
Or in some cases, under them.
Right.
Right.
You know, here we have such specific roles, and the obvious outcome is what is on the air every day. Right. And so.
Oh, yeah. It's out there too. Like your outcome.
Right. And once it's out there, I can't bring it back.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, we have.
It's public.
Right. Right.
Your outcome is public.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm-hmm. Can't change it.
Stakes are even higher than.
Yeah. Can't change it. Can't. So, you know, we have several different visions. You know, we have visions of client success.
Yeah.
Right.
So client outcome, right?
Right. What so if you like? If you want to talk about client outcome, well, first you start with the salesperson that, you know, recommends the schedule and repetition and, you know, and partly content of their commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the traffic manager who schedules that commercial in the appropriate time slots in order to get them the best, you know, the best, the most listeners mm-hmm. for that particular mm-hmm. project or event. And then you have the production staff that actually writes and produces the spot to give the vibe and the information and everything, but yet in an entertaining way so that people, you know, we try not to have boring commercials because we don't want you to turn them off.
Okay, so really point being the specific roles and articulating and mm-hmm. defining them for people. In other words, we're in the relay of the client experience. I'm just going to use a relay for an example. In the relay race of the race to the successful client outcome,
mm-hmm.
where the baton handoffs are, like where they need to be running faster on the track.
Right.
Was there a good handoff?
Right.
That's probably relevant because in your business, things get handed.
Right.
And then the salespeople go sell and then they, you know, then they.
Absolutely.
They have to hand that project off to somebody else for execution.
Right.
Okay. I think I want to focus in on that piece because mm-hmm. I think that's the piece right now that I, when I was talking to the team this week about the model I wanted for scalability for the design coach moving forward. There's all these different models that you can choose from on an org chart. You know, there's linear stuff, and you can take an attorney's approach where you have a board of directors, and then you've got a bunch of attorneys, or in this case, designers that work underneath you that work independently on their projects. I've had that model, and what I ended up having to do is kind of fix other designers' work who were working for me because they just weren't pitching it the way mm-hmm. that maybe I would pitch it.
Right.
Now, the challenge here is that one of the pitfalls of a lot of entrepreneurs is they can't scale because they can't divorce themselves from
Right.
Delegation.
Right.
That has not been my problem. I've really enjoyed that piece.
I like to delegate.
But I've enjoyed it for a couple different reasons. I've enjoyed it because it gives people opportunity to grow within their role, to learn, and to sort of, I would say, I don't want to say hasten, but it definitely advances their understanding of success and failure with the safety of not having to own their own company.
Right.
Like they can make a mistake on your dime. They're not making every mistake I made, I had to make on my dime.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like the opportunity of creating that for professionals at all levels to be able to. I mean, listen, I'm not looking for them to fail.
Right.
But I am looking them to
learn
mm-hmm. And you learn something from every client interaction. And I'm sure it's the same with you. I mean, you've been in this business for how long now?
I've been here at the radio station for 22 years.
Okay, so you're 22. Mm-hmm. I'm going on 26.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still thinking our best radio shows are out there. Mm-hmm. Our best communication or our best ability to communicate is still out there. Our best creativity is still out there. And you still want to, even though sometimes people take your vision and twist it, people take your vision and don't execute it, you still want to continue to create that opportunity for other people because you believe in it that much. You believe right. in it, and so much so that you own the station now.
See, yes.
That's
almost.
That's commitment.
Yes.
So the one thing right. that I think people have to understand is that the visionary, when the minute you know a visionary is not flighty, ask them how long they've been producing visions and have they done it successfully?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's easy to be a visionary. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't actually produced the vision, you're not really a visionary. You're a dreamer.
Right. Okay. Right. And that's a
Those
big difference.
Are different.
Yeah.
Like, this is the conversation because I want to reverse engineer something for someone, especially as we go into the next segment here. Because I want to talk about when you articulate what you want the outcome to be, and that's what we're going to cover in segment three. You know, what is your specific outcome? And I'll share our experience at the Design Coach for what we want. And then maybe everyone can think about how that is applicable to their lives, both personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. But that outcome, and then the behaviors, and then the specifics that then emulate, like that build the behavior or are the example of the behavior, matter. Mm-hmm. And that's where, if you're a true visionary, you should be able to articulate not just the behaviors to get to the outcome, but the specific tasks within it. And then be able to approach people to say, I know you can do it. I believe in you. And here's the opportunity. Anyway, stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip. Sasana, we're talking about vision, right? Not just in your interior, but maybe in your life as well.
I wanted you to explain the difference between vision and outcome. What is the difference between vision or an outcome, or is there a difference?
Because okay. So let's.
Hopefully what your vision is, right? So
yeah, well, let's. I guess to quote like Vince Lombardi. You strive for perfection and hope you get excellence.
Right.
I will phrase it to you that way. Vision would be the utopia,
mm-hmm.
right? You get 100% of exactly what your vision is.
The ultimate dream.
The ultimate dream, mm-hmm. but not the ultimate dream becoming reality.
Right.
What I find is that if you've done it well, it'll exceed your vision.
Right.
If you've done it the right way.
True.
And especially if you've done it with others, because you then see them having their own visions. And then reverse engineering it, and all of a sudden it begins to sort of like multiply.
Right.
Which I think is exciting for a business owner to see. I'm starting to see that. I'm starting to see what we're doing at the Design Coach affecting people's lives, seeing them take their roles in new directions, opening up avenues for them creatively, professionally, personally. That's the exciting thing about being a business owner versus an entrepreneur.
Right.
Okay. So when I would say to you, entrepreneurs are interesting because they're great at creating ideas. I don't know that they're great in leading a business. Okay. So when you ask me vision would be the ideal. Outcome would be as close as
right.
you can get to the utopian nature of the vision. At the Design Coach, which is a great segue, we talked about that a lot this week, and I was kind of rolling out one of my new org charts that also, it was interesting because it was a concentric. It was a circle, clients, me, GM in the middle, and then layers of sort of influence and service, right? And all the people, it was both influence and support structure,
mm-hmm.
right? Like there's a nucleus and then all of these people create this experience, but and how big does that actual circle get? But the most important thing about this was embedded around it was the service cycle. In other words, in our world, it's design, fulfillment, lifestyle, maintenance, and then repeat. Mm-hmm. Design, right?
Right?
Fulfillment, lifestyle, maintenance. We want to design our clients' homes.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously want to deliver that outcome, but that's just half of our circle.
Right.
Next is we want them to use their home. So we teach them from a lifestyle perspective how to utilize it, how to enjoy it, how to leverage it, right, to its
fullest.
And
not just look at it, right?
And not just look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also understand that if you're going to own these things, there's maintenance.
Right.
That's involved in maintaining the design,
right.
maintaining the lifestyle. And that gives us at the Design Coach a relatively, what I call a perpetual relationship cycle, which we didn't have. You know this, I've talked about, I would get a little depressed when I would put your heart and soul into a project, only then to pin the final drapery pin. And then unless they had another need design-wise, you know, you would know them.
You're done.
You're kind of done. Like
yeah.
You know, there was a natural, very deep ebb, I should say. Maybe
right.
we weren't done, but there was a deep ebb to the relationship. And that never sat well with me because we had grown so close growing the vision together.
Right.
I got to know the families and I got to know and the greatest thing about, I think, what we do with the design coaches, we want you to find a way to wear your weird in a very wonderful way.
That's awesome.
And in a very stylistic way.
Yeah.
So I didn't like that. So when I released this vision of what I thought this org chart looked like, that was also part sales cycle, if
right.
you will, or
yeah.
relationship cycle, as we
sure.
call it. And I launched that. I also had to talk to the team about, like, well, okay, well, why are you doing this? Like, what are you trying to produce with this? I was trying to produce a way to articulate my vision for the way people could fit in. In other words, where did I orbit? Around the nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
And that nucleus, in this essence, is my ideas and the client.
Right.
Like, in my operation, I am the genesis of the ideas and I am the genesis of the relationship. I don't have multiple principals running around selling on
right.
my behalf. I could. I mean, I could maybe down the road, I get a couple principals that I really enjoy working with. We become partners in business and then they've got their own, you know what I mean? Like, they're selling on their behalf. But that's not what I have right now.
Right.
What I have right now is, right, like, I am in the middle, in the mix with my clients.
Right.
Okay. And then I have all of this wonderful support staff and this awesome support team that helps reinforce the vision and make it all happen. So thankful for them. But also, I've engineered it that way.
Right.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the outcomes that we were looking for. Because I said to them, I said, you know, your outcome and your vision doesn't have to be complex. In fact, sometimes the less complex it is, the easier it is for people to understand. So
I mean, how many times do we overthink it?
Oh my gosh. I
make
do that
it
listen,
so much
my
more
team,
hard.
They, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I think what I've learned, because I've become more wise, I've probably grown more in the past 5 years than I have the past 15. There's a lot of reasons for that. Partly because when you're in the fog of raising kids.
Right.
No, you are. When you're in the fog
yeah.
of, you know, age 10 to... You know, 20.
Right. I mean, you think you don't sleep when you have babies. Wait till you're running around.
Part of it's now, you've learned what didn't work.
Right.
And you also have learned to emulate what does. And I think what I found is sometimes the simpler, the better.
Mm-hmm.
The keep it
Always.
Simple, stupid principle
yeah.
on your vision is actually a real thing. That doesn't mean that your vision can't be big. It just means keep it simple.
Right.
So I was able to break down ours into two pieces, and I'll share those with you. One was, we want our clients to love where they live. Can they say, through their association with the design coach team, I love where I live? Okay?
Right.
Do I love it? Not just, do I like it?
Right.
Is it okay?
They did what
does
I wanted.
Does it kind of
right.
work? Do you really love it? In other words,
right.
well, what does that mean? Do you have an attachment, an appreciation, right? A real passion for where you live? I wanted through the whatever I could offer clients creatively, I just wanted it to be born of a love of and an appreciation for what we offer and for what I can do for them. But also, ultimately, I wanted them I wanted to create it and have them attach themselves to it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say to you, design for us is personal, it's intensely personal because it's born of this offering that, you know, I and my team put our heart and souls into. And if the client doesn't attach themselves to it, that's deflating.
Right.
Because they didn't what? Love where they live.
Right.
They sort of liked it.
Right.
Which is why I don't do staging. It's why I don't do staging for real estate
mm-hmm.
because that's transactional. You're making it look pretty to try to sell it. You're not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's good enough. It's good enough to do the transaction. That's not what we do. We try to do heirloom interiors.
Right.
Right.
Like nothing else.
And the second part of ours, not that they just loved where they lived, but the style that we were able to craft with them was one they could call their own. It didn't look like anybody else's. It didn't feel like anybody else's. And that is reflected in the diversity of our portfolio. I actually get criticized quite a bit about, like, well, I can't kind of figure out where you land. I'm like,
depends on the client.
Well, it depends on the client.
Right.
I design for them, not for me.
Right.
Like, and especially in conversations with vendors who would like to show me things that they think I would like.
Doesn't matter what you like.
I said, what matters is what I think I can apply to the different projects that I'm currently working on. So why would you not show me this contemporary line just because you saw one portfolio that we did of one home that was neo-traditional?
Right.
Why would you not allow me access to that side of my toolbox?
Right.
Or palette.
Right.
Or whatever it was. So it was very interesting when I was speaking to my team about this. I said, listen, do you love where you live? Do the clients say that as our vision? And don't you want to do that? Don't you want to be a part of something that helps people love where they live?
Right.
Right? If the answer is no, then you probably don't want to work at the design company.
Exactly. Exactly. Right?
But the other side of it is we also want to be able to create outcomes and designs that they can call their own, meaning eventually they own it.
Mm-hmm.
They own the design because it's reflexive of them. Yet we constantly and repeatedly hear, I would have never chosen that on my own, but it's so me.
Mm-hmm.
That is the highest compliment.
Sure.
So many of our clients do give us and have given us for quite some time. I would have never chosen it because you gave us the creative confidence. I talked last week about pastels and having color confidence. I find people come to this, my business, because they actually want us to have the confidence to do things that maybe they wouldn't have thought of, yet, at the same time, still fit.
Right. Well, they're looking for someone to trust, mm-hmm. right? And so if they call you, they've already opened up their minds to, okay, this is going to be different. This is not going to be like anything I've ever seen.
It's a little scary because it's like, it's like, I'm not seeing anything in his portfolio necessarily that looks like me. That's good. And that's by design.
Right.
Because wouldn't you be irritated if all I did in my portfolio was kind of show the same style of home and did it 50 times?
Right.
Wouldn't you be like, oh, there's my light again, or there's the color scheme again. And, you know, we're trying with what our offerings are. To try, and listen, we're not trying to be an anomaly. Do you know what I'm saying? Like from a stylistic perspective, I mean, we're not trying to like force things together that don't work, but we want to be an anomaly for our approach. And that's why I could have named this business Philip Sassano Design.
Sure.
It's the design coach, because we coach people to those two outcomes, a style you can call your own, and do you love where you live? I then had to take that, and I'll do this in segment four, but what I had to do with my team is once I put together this understanding of like, okay, operationally, this is what we do. And listen, I have team members at all different experience levels who are awesome. They're just awesome people. They have things within their DNA I can't teach, which is, Nancy, you know, that's extremely helpful.
It is. It's nice to have a natural.
Yes. And they're all naturals at certain things, which is fantastic. And they compliment me wonderfully, and I could not do what I do without them. But when we come back for the break, I want to talk about the behaviors and the details that I don't think visionaries get enough credit for reverse engineering to bring these visions to life. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Oh my gosh, this is segment four, isn't it?
It is.
Wah, wah.
I know you hate segment four.
I'm so glad we had this time together. Anyway. Good morning, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And we're talking about vision, not necessarily visionary leadership, but kind of what are the steps? You know, what are the test steps to bring something to life, whether it's an interior, right, a lifestyle, family, a relationship, and whatever the outcome might be.
You know, you talked last segment about, you know, how do you get everyone to come together with their part of the pie to make it a complete recipe, right?
Sure.
And I think I feel like that's where you're going when you say visionaries don't get enough credit.
We don't.
Because you have to have the intuition is indispensable. Like if you don't have, and it's different for every job, right? So on this particular project, you know, three of the four people really are intense, and maybe the fourth person, well, there's just not, you know, necessarily a large percentage of contribution that they've made. It's different for every single job. And you have to you have to balance all of the people and all of their natural ability and
well, and all of their needs and all of their perceived
right.
like their wishes and wants and desires mm-hmm. professionally and personally. You have to balance all of that.
Right.
And
that's where you don't get the credit.
Gears grind.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's interesting that you kind of phrase it that way because I will say to you, and I will start segment number four kind of this way. Because we're going to reverse engineer the behavior of what it takes to put the vision, to bring these visions to life. I think it's even more profound as a visionary that if you're going to articulate a vision, in other words, if you're going to speak it out loud mm-hmm. and you're going to bother to hire people and you're going to put their livelihood, like you're, you know what I mean? You're trying
you're
to provide
now
for
their you're responsible for them, yeah.
I think you have a responsibility to articulate it.
Yeah.
And do it well and at a high level. I do think there are visionaries out there, and this is where the entrepreneurs fall short. They articulate a big idea and a big vision, and they just can't articulate, or more importantly, even hire people around them to help them articulate. I will tell you, one of the reasons why the Design Coach is where it is in the great spot that we're in on the precipice of opening up our showroom and our retail experience, right? Which now is going to include Wolf Sub-Zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to include Crystal Cabinetry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are going to be creating, and I'll talk about this probably more next week. We're going to be creating in this new space, 9,200 square feet. We're going to be creating a one-of-kind experience that will blow away anything we've ever created. And the only reason we're there is because I had the vision, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew how to help. I knew how to articulate what I wanted, but I was smart enough to hire other people who could help me articulate it.
Right.
I realized there was a limitation to what I could do on my own. And that's very important because you, as a visionary, you have to understand that it's not on you, but it's on you to articulate, teach, coach, and steward it. In other words, you have to be a steward of that vision, and you do that through responsible communication with the people that you're asking to help you pull it off.
You forgot a word.
What?
Recognize.
Well, that, yes.
Recognize what you have.
Yes.
What you need first, mm-hmm. and then recognize
yeah.
whether or not there's potential
in
that particular
because
hire.
Because eventually, here's what happens, Nancy. You articulate a vision, tell me how you're going to get there. You better have specifics.
Right.
And when I do that, I think my clients, even when I've made a bold creative statement to them about something big that I want to do in their homes,
mm-hmm.
I'm always ready to back it up. That's experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's wisdom. So it's the perfect combination of in the definition. I love that wisdom is in there because it is both imagination and wisdom.
Exactly.
It's both.
Well, I think, too, you used another word that describes the difference between a visionary and an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
which is the word transactional. Nothing that you do is transactional. Nothing.
I don't think with what I do, it can't be. I don't think it can be. And I think that's what people don't like about service providers, when it feels that way.
Right. You feel like a file number.
You don't want your physician to have it feel transactional.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want anything that's that intensely personal to you mm-hmm. to feel transactional, right?
True.
In fact, these days, trying to make it more personal is a challenge for big business.
Exactly.
So the market, there's a disconnect in their marketing. And I will tell you that as we talk about how to reverse engineer, I will say that I also then boiled down that there were two things that the Design Coach that help us pull off these visions of, do you love where you live? And is it a style you can call your own? One was execution. Did you do what you were going to say when you said you were going to do it? And mm-hmm. did you do it well?
Right.
Now, listen, there's a lot of experience, a lot of success, and a lot of failure in all of that.
Right.
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 I'm just letting you know, like, you don't always execute to the best of your ability. Sometimes it's bandwidth. Sometimes it's team members. Sometimes it's your fault. Sometimes it's not your fault.
Sometimes out of your control.
Correct.
But
it doesn't mean that you still didn't own the failure. Because
exactly.
You still have to own it. Right.
Right. And so sometimes it's more about how you handled it.
So
not
yes,
the failure
100%.
Itself.
So execution is one.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that you have to try to execute excellence to the best of your ability every day. But
right.
The second was table setting. Let me describe this for you. Did you prepare for the handoff or setting the table for the other person to come in? For instance, did you set the table so when the person wants to come fill the wine glass and deliver the meal and there's no plates, there's no silverware. There's
right.
Like
who forgot
the napkin?
Right,
like,
which hangs up the next person.
Which hangs up the next
person. And
they're
not going to deliver.
And then it's late. Like, We talked about earlier in the show, the baton handoff,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's relevant. Like, was it a clean handoff? Table setting. Are you anticipating the needs of the next team member, mm-hmm. the needs of the project, the needs of your vendor? Are you anticipating that? That is the hardest thing for younger professionals to understand, is the anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had to do it enough.
Mm-mm.
They haven't had to do it enough.
They want a list, and they want to accomplish the list and move, and then that's
yeah,
it.
I mean, what you're going to find right now is life's not one big rubric.
Right.
You can't just check the box and we're like, yay!
I'm done.
Thank you for doing your job as listed in the rubric.
Right.
Excellence is outside the rubric.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, it just is. And that's not how we've schooled our kids, mm-hmm. to a certain extent.
That's right.
They've had to find other ways to become situationally more aware and to understand the one concept that if you want more, you actually have to do more. To want, to deserve to want more, you have to do more.
Right.
Extra means doing extra.
Extra.
There is... That is a super simple formula. So the table setting is a very important one, because finding opportunities to be able to give your team to anticipate is really important, because it's, I know where I learned it. I learned it through caddying.
Ah.
So when a golfer would hit a shot and he'd land on the green, and maybe he didn't land on the green at all the entire round. It was the one time he actually hit a shot on the green.
Right.
It's such a great feeling to have your caddy just hand you the putter in advance.
Uh-huh.
Not, could I have my putter?
Right.
Right? Because I'm going to need it, quote unquote.
Right. And don't hand him the driver.
Ask.
Right.
And then you were like, great shot. And you smiled and you handed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, let's go get it. Right. And you were
teamwork.
You were managing the experience through teamwork, through anticipation, and you were table setting. If you can envision doing that for the next person in the process, like for you at the radio station or for me in the interior design space, it's super important, and I'm finding that anticipation and that execution, having both of those skill sets are oh my gosh, they are so important to executing a vision,
mm-hmm.
and having it come to life. Execution and table setting. If you're not doing those two activities, if one of those is missing, in particular table setting, what happens is then execution looks like you're out of rhythm with your teammates.
True.
Because you can have one person, I'm executing. See, let's go. You're not. I am. That becomes a little bit of like Lord of the Flies.
And then the one that's executing has to stop. The one that's, you know, making ground, and the one that's moving forward.
Well, because then you get the person who's executing going, I'm executing. Look at me. Why can't you execute? Right? You get that. Right? You get that dynamic.
You get that too.
Right? You get that person.
Yeah.
Right? You get the person whose hand is always up in the air the minute the teacher asks the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Well, it's not about that. When you're trying to execute a vision with a team, when you're trying to do that, table setting for one another, sharing your experiences, sharing the service side. Because
mm-hmm.
one is the do side, the other is the service side. So like the do side is execution, the service side is anticipation and table setting.
Right.
Have you laid the foundation for the success of someone else? And before you've done that, have you laid the foundation for success for yourself through good preparation? Table setting doesn't necessarily have to be for a team member.
Right.
Table setting could be, are you taking the professional time and space to quiet your mind, to be prepared, and to produce in an efficient manner in that's in alignment with your teammates to bring this big vision to life?
And think about
it. Oh my God, actually think.
Right.
I don't know how often we're giving ourselves the time to think. And be quiet with what that looks like. I'm finding these days that early morning for me is magic. Like magic. I don't get the phone calls. I don't have people in my ear. I can really just sort of be with my thoughts, and I can put it all together. And what I love doing about in the morning is that by the time the team gets in, I'm ready for them. I've set the table for them because they're relying on me to communicate what might be some specific objectives I want done that day. The key is then to not do it the morning of.
Right.
And what we're learning and what we're doing very, very well right now is we're thinking now 2, 3, 4 weeks out.
Right.
We will start to be thinking a quarter out, 2 quarters out with our projects. I know we will, because it's already starting to take on a life of its own, and mm-hmm. people are loving. Oh my gosh, I executed. I was recognized. I was a part of that outcome. because I did this great thing. And then they're also realizing how important the table setting is. Because then they get, because the table setting that was done for them allowed them to execute. So there becomes this shared symbiotic relationship between execution and table setting.
Cogs in the wheel.
And then everyone else wants to be like, oh, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah, I can do that for you. Let me handle that. Even though sometimes technically it's not even their job.
Right.
See, that's when you know you've got something great.
It's called teammates, not employees. Yes.
Right. And it goes beyond trust.
Big difference.
It goes to service. Trust is, I trust it's going to get executed. Fine. Fine.
Somehow.
It's beyond trust. Mm-hmm. Beyond that.
Right.
And I think the behaviors go into that. Like, what does good execution look like? Well, listen, you can absolutely outline what that looks like for everyone's job. Execution in fulfillment, execution in maintenance, execution in design, execution in lifestyle. You know what that looks like. There are specific tasks and acts that then make up the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that. So I think in a discussion of, well, we could have gone into four segments additional on this, but I will tell you, only having 1 minute left, I will say to you this, Nancy, I will say that I think that to a certain extent, everybody can be a visionary. It's just a question of whether or not your visions are realistic and you can pull them off.
Right.
And whether or not you can do them alone or whether or not you should be doing them with other people.
Right.
I will tell you, it's a lot easier to be motivated with a vision when doing it with other people.
Of course.
And that's what we do at The Design Coach. Anyway, have a great Sunday, everybody. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. You've been coached.